Thrones.
Hello and welcome to another NetSounds podcast with me, Jamie McDonald. And on this episode, I am joined for a long overdue blether, a natter, the Scottish musician and singer-songwriter David McGregor. McGregor's current project is Broken Chanter, and at the end of 2021, released the second full-length Broken Chanter album called Catastrophe Hits, the follow-up to 2019's acclaimed debut. So, pull up a seat, stick your headphones on, if they're not already on, and for the next 40 minutes or so, you can have a natter with David about the band, about Broken Chanter, about playing live music again, what's got him through the last 2 years or so, and of course some music from Broken Chanter. And let's start off with this one from the latest album, Catastrophe Hits. This is Dancing Skeletons.
Head in my lungs, smash my TV, cut off my phone and let go. A friendly face to grin at the times, to feed you a lie.
Yeah.
So, welcome David McGregor to NetSounds Natter. Welcome along, David. It is great to speak to you again. We've been planning this for a while now, but anyway, here we are. And also, things are looking great for Broken Chanter right now with the album out recently and live gigs too.
How you doing, man? Yeah, it's good to speak to you again, and it has been quite some time. Yes, things are good at the moment. The record came out towards the end of last year, but we got the vinyl very recently because of the COVID and Brexit delays and all that. So it's physically in shops as of last Friday now. And I've just come back from being on tour in England and a kind of first leg of actually getting out there after the hopefully the worst of COVID. I'm not going to say post-pandemic because, you know, we're still in the middle of one. But it's been great. It's been pretty exhausting, to be honest, because it's gone from zero to normal almost so quickly, and just you know, balancing everything and the usual kind of promo for a record is quite demanding when you throw in shows and other work and everything, and when you've not been doing as much for almost 2 years now, it feels even more kind of exhausting. But I mean, it's been great. I don't want to complain at all because it's been fantastic playing shows and getting in front of people again, and you know, even just chatting to people at the merch stand and stuff. Just, it was really great to get out there.
Yeah, it must be a kind of, I think, apprehension at first getting back to that, and then when you're in the full swing of it, I guess sometimes on stage maybe it feels like it's never gone away. Does it feel like that when you were doing these gigs in England? Like, this just felt so normal and you didn't think about anything else?
Yeah, well, there was the added kind of, there's an added kind of fear in England as well that so there's nobody wearing masks down there.
Really?
Like, very, very few people wear masks, and that is the advice that they've been given, so like, I'm not being accusatory at all, but it's quite strange. The four of us in the band were in like service stations and stuff, wearing masks and still being really, really careful, and we're kind of getting looked at like we were crazy in some places. And also just, you know, playing to room pools of people with no masks on, which can happen up here as well, because, you know, if you're at a gig, you don't need to wear a mask.
Yeah.
It's quite, that's the one thing that kind of snaps you out of you've never been away. It's, there's the lingering kind of creeping COVID paranoia, because while I've had three jags and, you know, should be healthy enough and young enough to not suffer two great consequences for it, I don't really want to take the risk or risk any of my loved ones, friends, or people that I just bump into.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well-being. So there's still that kind of hanging over it. So, like, there are moments where you forget yourself on stage, you know, like, ah, like, you know, it's like riding a bike. But when you do think about that, you it's not like you feel like you've never been away, because you really appreciate it. You're going, here I am on a stage, and it's been so long since I've been able to do this regularly, and it's been really, I've been really grateful for it.
I think it must have been 2019 that we probably last spoke, I think, maybe. Or before that, actually, I think before the debut came out. It was 2019, wasn't it? The album was out. The debut.
October 2019.
It's
so
weird.
Literally.
Yeah. The album before the world kind of shut down, and then an album now. What would you say is the difference between these two albums?
I think there's a huge difference in sound, I think. The first record, I went out to a house in Donegal that was right on the coast. It was like in a peninsula just sticking out into the Atlantic at the end of January 20, I can't remember, but obviously before it came out in 2019. And I went out there with Gal, who was the engineer and producer, and then also with Audrey. So we went out there and we recorded like most of the record, and we were surrounded by just the most incredible views every day. Like, the live room where the drums were set up had big bay windows over a kind of almost a sea loch, just the mouth of a river, really. And every day you would get sun, you would get rain, and literally piles of hailstones, and you wake up to snow over the 2 weeks we were there, and it was really mental. And, you know, we'd get up in the morning, I'd basically be shouting through cords and structures to the live room or to the the desk that was set up in the kitchen of this house, and we'd go through that, through an idea for a song, and then the afternoon we'd go out for a walk, come back, we'd have lunch, you know, and it was like, we soaked up, I think, a lot of that kind of space. I don't know, it sort of tied through, like, an experience of the couple of years around that record when I was recording it, to try and make it more of, not more than just, you know, pop songs, but to have it more anchored to the real world and found sounds and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to distance myself as much as possible from the sound of Kid Canaveral.
Yeah.
Because it was a brand new thing. And I asked Gal, the producer, to say, if there's anything that sounds like Kid Canaveral, stop me as soon as you realise that it's going too far in that direction. And there's songs that we binned. There's like a song we spent a whole day on that ended up in the bin and will never be removed from it because of that. And the first one had a lot more kind of ambience to it, and it was quite introspective because, you know, the band had split up and it was quite difficult, if I'm perfectly honest.
Yeah.
It wasn't... we're all very good friends. Like, and I don't mean there's absolutely no drama, and there was no drama when the band split up at all.
No, but you just wanted to make something different, and I think a lot of people would, probably ourselves too, would have said David McGregor from Kid Canaveral. And I think you want to kind of distance yourself, like, I know I did that, but now I'm doing this.
Yeah, and it's quite mournful because, you know, it wasn't, if it had been up to me, then we would have done another Kid Canaveral record. So there's a real kind of, it's quite melancholic and mournful in places, that record, but I did want to make it, you know, a real departure. So for the second record, for Catastrophe Hits, that just came out now, I felt that it would be really quite, it wouldn't be very, very good to do another record that was so introspective and hand-wringing when the world's falling about it around you.
It's quite different. I mean, it's to me, it sounds like, you know, it's kind of like that sharp, snappy sound, but there's also some quite kind of, I guess, reflective moments in it. But it is, there's a few hit sounding records on there, if you get me. And it's definitely a different tone, which was interesting because I don't know, I've heard so many albums from artists who have recorded during lockdown and great albums, but they are quite reflective and somber. But that's not the case with Catastrophe Hits, is it?
No, and it was a reaction to everything that was going on. It wasn't just a reaction to the pandemic and being in lockdown. And I said to Paul Savage, produced the Catastrophe Hits, we had lots of pre-production meetings. In fact, we started discussing doing the records before the first one came out. Not that I had anything written for it, and it was a very different world at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of the big headline idea of it was, this is not a lockdown record, this is not a pandemic record. When this record comes out, we will hopefully be in a part of the pandemic where things have eased significantly and people will need a lift.
Mm-hmm.
People will need something hopeful, something joyous. It isn't like asinine, like saccharine pop or anything. There are parts of it too that we'd hope would be a call to arms almost, because we're in a very bad situation everywhere on this planet. And things are going badly, and things are going to continue to go badly if we are continued to be forced to see ourselves all as individuals, and to continue to eschew notions like society and community.
Yeah.
Because the only way that we're going to address issues like the climate emergency that we're facing, the constant disinformation that we're bombarded with, and, like, you know, let's not beat about the bush, actual fascism that is creeping in into many Western countries. We're going to have to look out for one another. We're going to have to organise, and we're going to have to kick back.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of underlying of a lot of the record. Obviously, there's some personal reflection on what's happened over the last couple of years, but the pop songs with a positive message of hope, like, things are going badly, but we're not completely done yet. There is still hope for those. Sometimes you just want to say, I love social justice and I want to marry anti-fascism.
Exactly.
And that's good as well. So,
Is that the name of the next album?
Yes.
So you've got a fair selection of pals on board for making this album. You've got Jill O'Sullivan. I'm going to miss someone out here in a minute. Man of the Minch is on there. I think you were on his debut album as well. And you've got Audrey Tate, who's now buggered off and done stuff with Franz Ferdinand, which is great for her. And there's other names there I've missed out. I'm sorry. But how did this kind of beautiful collective of people come about?
So when Broken Chanter was in its infancy, the first person that I called was Audrey Tate, because I'd done gigs here in the past, and also she came to Norway to do a festival as a debt for Scott, the drummer from Kid Canaveral. And after playing with her at that festival, I was like, bloody hell, you know, if ever do something else, then and you get Audrey on the go, Audrey's one of the just kindest, sweetest people that you can meet as well. Like, she's great crack.
She's lovely.
She keeps the morale up on tour as well with endless positivity and good chat. But she's one of the best drummers in the world, and that's not hyperbole.
She's a machine.
Yeah, the sheer range of styles and the kind of versatility of her playing and her internal metronome, she's unbelievable. And I'm absolutely delighted that she's now with Franz Ferdinand, because it's so richly deserved, and it's wonderful seeing someone like one of your best mates get a gig like that, because she deserves it, and she'll be amazing for them.
Yeah,
and but she was on tour with us in England there as well, so she's still in my head that a member of Broken Chanter, who I will not be able to have sitting behind me quite as often over the next few years.
Yeah,
a couple of years anyway. But Audrey was the first person that I called. For the first record, it was Audrey, Jill O'Sullivan, Gav Prentice, and Hannah Shepherd, and Kim Carney and Emma Cooper, all contributing various bits to it. And Gal actually played the bass on the first record as well, and did some things and programming. So this one kept the kind of the core band of Audrey and Jill O'Sullivan. So Jill O'Sullivan did go to fiddle and almost all of the backing vocals on both records.
Yeah,
her again, she's a virtuoso on the violin, and she's four octaves in her singing range, and again, it's just one of the just loveliest people gone. I made sure that with Gav retiring from Broken Chanter to focus on other things, I made sure that I kept the standard for only very sound folk. So coming in guitar was Bart Owl, Eagle Oil and Our Lady of Sorrow, and also Graham Smiley on bass and piano for the recording of it, from an awful lot of stuff. Graham's been on some incredible records over the years, and has the old nominative determinism. He's one of the cheeriest and most good-natured folk going. So had Ali Hendry from Randolph Sleep on Flugelhorn and Trumpet as well. And Pedro, Man of the Minch, and Jill Higgins came and lent their talents to Filaments, the song that closes side one. There's a lot of really, really talented people on that record. And when you pick a band, it really helps if you're the worst one, because you can only be lifted up the way. So that's how I bass things. And for the tour there, for the tour, four of us, it was myself, Audrey, Bart, and Charlotte Printer on bass and vocals. And Charlotte is just, again, absolute power, and was just a hoot, and is an unbelievably talented musician. So been having a lot of probably... I've hopefully been learning things rather than just showing my own inadequacy over the past wee while.
Listen, you mentioned Pedro, Man of the Minch, who actually, I did one of our first kind of natter podcasts as we're talking these, calling these at the moment. And what I'm going to do actually in just a minute is play, in fact, I'll play it now, a track from the album that you recorded in Gaelic. And listen, my father was from Harris. He spoke Gaelic. He broadcast on radio in Gaelic. I don't have a word. I'm ashamed to say it. I don't have a word of it. I put it down to the fact that my mother never spoke it, so we didn't speak it as a family in the house, and I just never learnt it. My brother's the same. So you're going to have to tell me the title for the song and what that's all about.
So it's Ishwando V is the one from Catastrophe Hit. It's kind of a repeated mantra over and over again.
Yeah.
Bina Bechin Becca Kala Konasa Ersna Bechin Mora Ishe, which means together the small animals can eat the big animals, or the small beasts can eat the big beast. And then the chorus refrain is Ishwando V, eat your fill.
Bina bechin becha kala komasach, efna bechin mora ihe. Bina bechin becha kala komasach, efna bechin mora ihe.
David, tell more about the track then. How did that come about, the idea to record a track in Gaelic? I know you'd done some stuff on Man of the Minch record, but you've been learning Gaelic, I gather. I've seen some of the posts as well, and you sometimes have the odd Gaelic tweet this up as well. So you're a fluent speaker. Is it a language you're learning, or how did it all come about?
I am considerably far away from being fluent. it's something that I'd always been promising myself that I would learn, because my great granddad's the Butter Lewis, and my granny's family, they were on the mother's side of the Black Isle as well.
Okay.
And it was always something that kind of, you know, interested me. There's Gaelic names in the family. My mother's name's Shona, the Gaelic spelling of it though, and I've never seen one or two others spelt that way, and she's constantly irritated by people spelling it wrong. I started doing distance learning at Solomon Rustic a few years ago, and then shamefully I couldn't keep up with the weekly tutorials and fit everything else in, because I was just about to like put out a record again, and it was just all too much, and I was, you know, my homework was getting worse. Nuruchuk, my tutor, was like, you know, oh, you'll all be writing songs in Gaelic soon. So I took that as permission to do it. I'd actually started writing Minnegardinen from the first record before I was doing the course, the distance learning course. So and I got Kim Carney to sing the tune in the first one. Like, I wrote the song in Gaelic, and then I got my sister-in-law, Gusslo, to check it for me.
I think Pedro said something about Man of the Minch said something about he found it really really interesting writing in Gaelic, and it helped him understand the language more and learn more about it in a way maybe you wouldn't do if you were just sitting reading about it or listening to some audio about Gaelic. Probably you actually creating a song around it and using the language, It was probably a really practical way of developing your own skill of that language, I guess.
Yeah, and I found kind of, so Minnegardinen is a term from a book of Gaelic words and phrases collected by a priest from South East.
Okay.
At the end of the start of the 19th century, I forget. Well, that's a ruler across the Muckle, anyway. So it was. I obviously didn't read that. It would be remiss of me to lie into it that I did. It was Katrina Black who had pulled out 42 words and phrases from it that she found particularly interesting, and had a lino print done for each of them. So I did actually go and buy the book of all the phrases afterwards, but that's what introduced me to it, and I got in touch with Katrina and asked her permission to use that word that she had, you know, it's not her word, but she had brought it to attention and had put it to prominence with like a lino print and stuff, and I didn't want to be an absolute wido and just name a song after it and then not credit her at all, because she's done a wonderful book there, and I wouldn't know about it otherwise. So Minnegardinen is the small particles of dust that you see in a suspended in a beam of light as it enters a room.
Yeah.
So then I wrote a kind of a mournful song off the back of that, and Kim Carney, who's got just one of the most unbelievable voices I've ever heard, she very kindly agreed to sing it in the first record. The second record, I was convinced to sing the song myself. The pronunciation is a collection of Mid-Minch Gaelic, Tyree Gaelic, and I think Glaswegian accented Mangoan.
Yeah, because so, there's a different, like so many other languages, there's a different dialects and different phrases from different areas too, isn't there?
Yeah, so Beast, so Beachin, as it's pronounced in a lot of the Gaelic speaking areas, is different than Tyree. So Anna, Anna McDonald, I consulted her as well with the lyrics going, how's this? And she was saying, yep, but on Tyree it's pronounced Biauchin, but don't do that because it's pretty much, I think it may be just a couple of islands that pronounce it like that. So there's all those subtleties, and, you know, I think I was on BBC Radio and Gael on Wrap Up, and they were like, stop, they were basically in between chats, they're like, okay, stop, you don't need to apologise quite so much, but I felt like I had to caveat everything with, like, you know, because I'm coming at it as a non-native speaker, I don't want to be seen as someone who is, like, trying to cynically cultivate the language for some sort of perceived cultural clout. It's genuinely just something that fascinates me, and it's something that I'm just keen to try and keep learning.
When you were making the album, what were you listening to? What kind of other songs or genres kind of influenced the collection of songs that you've got here on Catastrophe Hits?
So I was over the pandemic. There's a music website, and I'm sure a lot of people listen to this, familiar with, called Bandcamp, and it's like a big it's a big music website where you can buy records and like actual physical releases as well and stuff. And
you can get lost in it as well for hours, can't you?
Yeah, but it's a much nicer way to engage with music than Spotify.
Yeah,
because it does support artists a lot better if you do buy something from them.
Yeah,
and they had decided to every Friday, in a stroke of PR genius on their part, certainly, to not take any commission off sales for the first Friday of every month. And they were calling them Bandcamp Fridays during the pandemic.
Yeah,
the first part of the pandemic. Anyway, I think they've just come back as well. Sorry, I know they've just come back. So for these, I set myself the challenge for the first one. I'm going to record a four-track EP of some sort of music in the wee, we've got a wee box room off the living room in the flat.
Yeah, there was a couple you'd out, and there was the first one quite kind of ambient chill. Is that was the same one? Yeah.
Yeah, so it was really to try and, you know, flex the old creative muscles, because I was worried if I didn't do anything for months and months, then I would really struggle to kind of get back into it. So what came out at that point was lots of kind of ambient stuff, lots of instrumental stuff.
Yeah.
So the first EP that I did was called Ambient One, Music for Airing Cupboards. And then
all
the ones after that I did one a month were kind of like... we play on a Brian Eno album title.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I was kind of doing during the pandemic. And some of those turned into the demos for the album. Allow Yourself, which is the single that's just come out, was originally just called Pat as a demo, and that's because the original thing that I'd worked up in the house was a lot more kind of 80s era Pat Benatar. And we all love Pat and Broke Janitor, so that was kind of... That was on the stereo when we were trying to kind of get the energy of some of our work for that song. Very much kind of listening to Document by R.E.M., the real kind of...
Great album, yeah.
Real scathing political R.E.M. of the late 80s. Listen to Skinny Palembe as well. His album, Dreaming is Dead Now. I think that came out in 2019, early on. Was listening to kind of Junior Brother, Dick Gunn. Tune Yard. I tried very much to replicate the guitar sound of I Want More by Can on one of the songs, and spent a good 40 minutes fiddling about with guitar effects. Finally got it working, and then Paul was like, this does not benefit the song, and I was like, I agree with you, but at least we got there in the end.
Some great stuff that people were doing on Bandcamp. I think sometimes they're still continuing the Bandcamp Friday as well, aren't they?
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
Which is great. Where, as you said, you go and buy stuff there. I think the artists get... Is it all of the... How does it work with Bandcamp Friday again?
So Bandcamp Friday, they don't take a cut from it, but you still have your payment processor fee, like PayPal get there.
Yeah.
Percentage, but everything else goes to the artist. But something... good to point out that if you go to a band or musician, certainly an independent band or musician or artist own website, then that will be commission free.
Absolutely, 100%
of the year. So there is that. But I'm always cautious about moaning too much about the state of modern music, because I don't want to be seen as someone who's just always having a gripe. And I don't think that anybody owes me a living. Right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that people, you know, have to go and buy my record. If you like it, I would love it if you went and bought it. But what enough people don't realise is that Spotify pays 0.0008 per stream.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need literally millions of streams to make the minimum wage. And again, it's kind of like, well, don't put your music on there. And it's like, well, I can't, you know, artists can't be like, can you stand and try to force back the tide here?
Yeah.
It's
with us. Yeah.
Well, the rabbit's out the hat for just now. I was desperately hoping that the whole Joe Rogan furore would bring it down, but it didn't. But then also people can level like a hypocritical accusation saying, well, you're trying to get playlists on Spotify as well. It's like, oh, yes, because that helps you reach a greater audience and those people might come to you play live. There was a really interesting podcast, Blind Boys podcast. He did an episode about cultural scarcity. He was talking about how while it's wonderful that you can get any song ever now, it's like so many things will pass people by because when he was younger, he bought Discovery by Daft Punk and he hated it. But then because he just spent €20 on Discovery by Daft Punk, he had to, you know, he listened to it over and over again. And then, you know, he now absolutely loves it because he gave it more than just a cursory once over. I just worry that people aren't connecting with it in the same way. That they're not connecting it and with it in a way that's the most rewarding for them. Like, you don't need any sort of qualification to wear a band t-shirt or to, you know, listen to a band's music at all. And ultimately, I make music because I want to connect with people. I want to express something that can then be a shared sentiment.
What are your plans next then? You've done the tour of England. Summer's coming up. Imagine festivals. Have you got your eye on recording more, or are you just enjoying this run at the moment?
So what's coming up next is there's quite a lot of Scottish shows. We're going back to England later in the year and to Wales as well. They're not announced yet, but I'm playing in all over Scotland, actually, almost all over Scotland. I'm saying that very aware that there's not an internet state as of yet. I've got solo shows in Kyle of Lochalsh at Skybridge Studios and Futtle Organic in St Monans and Fife. And then I've got full band shows in Glasgow, Irvine, Stirling, Dundee, Edinburgh, Aberdeen and Cumbernauld Theatre coming up over the coming months. There are some festivals in the summer, which I don't think any of them are announced yet, actually. And or certainly I've not announced that one yet anyway, but they'll be able to let you know about them soon. And then basically back on the road again in the late summer, early autumn, and I'm not going to, as a matter of course, I'm not going to talk about any future recording plans because this record has got legs on it.
Excellent. What a great way to end it all. I love it. That's great. Listen, David, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. For anyone that's not heard Broken Chance, we played a couple of tracks in the podcast there. Go and check out the album. It's called Catastrophe Hits. Check it out on Broken Chance website. Also on Last Night from Glasgow, isn't it? It's out in vinyl as well. And Bandcamp. And if you're going to Bandcamp, go and purchase it there. And as I always say, if you're streaming this stuff and you really like it, go and buy it. Even if it's a tote bag or whatever you're selling, or T-shirts, and try and get a show. It'd be great to see you up in Inverness again, David. I know sometimes it's a challenge to organise a show in Inverness, but that's a story for another time. But we'll see what we can do in the future. But look out for dates all across Scotland for Broken Chanter. David, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Listen, all the best.
Great. Thanks, Jamie. Look after yourself, and I'll all the best to you and yours, and I'll speak to you soon.
You too, and we'll speak to you soon, David. It's been an absolute pleasure. Broken Chanter. Thank you very much. Cheers.